Welcome to the Aligned Musician Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kimberly Hankins, and I'm a violist as well as a yoga and breathwork facilitator. I created this podcast to empower musicians like you to find your own path towards healing and normalize conversations around musicians' wellness. I'm so grateful for your support and thank you for joining me. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Aligned Musician Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kimberly Hankins, and this is an episode I did with Morgan Davis on Instagram Live on June 25th. So I'm a little bit behind with these podcast episodes, releasing them here on this platform. If you're not already, go follow at the Aligned Musician on Instagram. There you'll find in my Instagram TV, there's a lot of Instagram episodes that were recorded live. And I often offer these episodes live on Instagram as an opportunity to connect with us and to, of course, ask questions live. This is a really awesome way to get more engaged with the podcast and to let us know what things you're interested in, what you want to hear from us. Stay in touch. So in this episode, we talk about all things wellness. This has been really interesting to chat with Morgan because I feel like we have so much in common, and her experiences with performance anxiety and mindset are just so interesting and relatable. And she's just such a wealth of knowledge. I don't want to give too much of the episode away, but I did just want to introduce a little bit about Morgan before she introduces more about herself. Flutist Morgan Davis is an active performer and teacher who's passionate about music education and musicians' wellness. Fortunate to share the stage with many talented musicians, Morgan performs regularly with orchestras throughout southeastern Pennsylvania. Through her private studio, Davis Flute Studio, she's able to create an encouraging and inventive environment for learning for beginning students through adults. Morgan has performed throughout the United States with orchestras such as the Dubuque Symphony and Madison Symphony, as well as in Europe and Canada and various recital series. She has helped to promote an innovative approach to the arts as a member of the National Flute Association's Career and Artistic Development Committee and the inaugural chair of their entrepreneurship competition. She has invested in music education in her community as the program director of the Next Gen Youth Music Program in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Morgan recently became a 200-hour registered yoga teacher, and she enjoys helping musicians explore the mind-body connection to improve their well-being and performance. Thanks so much for joining us, and hope you enjoy the episode.
I'm Morgan. I teach in southeastern Pennsylvania. I live in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and I run a private studio of flute students here and freelance with local orchestras. I do some arts admin, and I am a recent graduate of a 200-hour yoga teacher training program.
Yeah, and Morgan, you're doing amazing things. I love how you're combining flute pedagogy and movement and wellness, and kind of how you've taken the ideas that you've learned in yoga and mindfulness and mindset and kind of combine them into your pedagogy. And I'm really excited to talk to you today. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, I'm like a longtime fan. I feel like, is that a weird thing to say? I'm a longtime fan of your Instagram page. So this was like very fun for me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Something that I often start our podcasts with, just to kind of set the tone and learn a little bit more about you. What would you like to share about your musician's wellness journey?
It feels like a big question.
It always is.
I think there's so much. I think the first thing is that I was super fortunate to have some really awesome teachers as a student, both when I was in college and previous to that, who really, really taught you as a whole person. They were like very invested in not just my, but like all of their students' well-being, how we were coping with being music students, or, with facing a really difficult career path. And so I feel grateful that I think I was in an environment where it was really normal to be able to sort of deal with things that crop up, you know, as you are performing more and putting more pressure on yourself and just learning to deal with all those challenges. But I think I was never a particularly like anxious performer. I mean, I was nervous, but I think I always felt like that was normal. We all get nervous and, you know, you just, it kind of comes and goes. You deal with those things kind of as they happen. And it wasn't until much later in my career, until I had moved to Pennsylvania and reestablished myself and really started freelancing and working a lot. And was I really feeling very fortunate to do that and just build up some like overwork. I was a little burnout and you're just kind of running on empty all the time. And then those things catch up to you. And so while I wasn't feeling particularly nervous in any way, I actually felt very confident as a performer at that time. I think not paying attention to other aspects of my health, other aspects of stress in my life, really, I didn't realize the impact it was having. So I was in the middle of a performance and had like a full-on anxiety attack for the first time. I mean, it was just out of nowhere. It was this full, I was just out of body on stage. And I just thought, like, I was crawling out of my skin thinking like, how am I going to get through the rest of this piece? And unfortunately it was a piece that has a huge, like top 10 flute excerpt in it. And I was playing principal and I was just like losing my mind. I'm thinking like, I am going to have to get up and walk off stage. I don't know how I'm going to do this. And I don't think anybody knew how like freaked out I was. I don't think anybody could tell. It wasn't my best playing, but I don't think I sounded like I was just, you know, freaking out. But it was, I mean, I just was so shook up by it. It was like, I couldn't get myself together. That was so, you know, the rest of the night, I just kept thinking everybody has to realize that like, I'm a fraud right now. Like everybody has to know that like how could I possibly be a good professional musician if this just happened? And then, you know, it just kind of fed into everything I did for the 6 months after that, you know, and then the 6 months after that. And you're just always, I always felt like I was on edge, like waiting for like, when is the next time this is going to happen? And at the time I was so preoccupied with the fact that it had happened that I wasn't really thinking about why. I wasn't processing that it wasn't because I felt unprepared for that concert. It wasn't because I felt nervous about my capabilities performing. I didn't put two and two together about how all of the factors of my life were playing into what had happened. And so at any rate, then, you know, it's like I went on that way kind of just nervous and like a little freaked out for like a year and a half afterwards. And then COVID happened. And so I had no choice but to, you know, be able to not perform for a little while, which I actually think in some ways was a huge, it was a good thing for me to take a break and then start to think about how I was feeling and like, why did this happen? And so I've always had, I mean, for the last 10 years or so, some interest in my health that developed again, like as a kid, you know, like a college student, you don't often think like, I should take better care of myself. You just have to get stuff done. And so in my 20s after grad school, I sort of started to take better care of myself. And I've always had this kind of percolating interest. But then when I had this moment of panic, it sort of said to me, like, this is important, you need to pay attention. And the fact that you've been running on fumes for the last like 20 years, you know, like since high school, it's just not going to work anymore. So that was a long answer to your question. But I think it, for me, all of the interest I had in my wellness, I didn't take it as seriously as I might have until something catastrophic happened that made me feel like, what am I going to do with the rest of my career if this keeps happening?
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And I totally relate to that too. I think a lot of what's modeled for us in the music world is that you just kind of push through things, and that the sense of like self-resilience is a strength that we cultivate by just going past our limits and ignoring stress and just doing what's asked of us, or trying to do what's on the page to the best of our ability. But And so it's hard to like take a step back and be like, wait a minute, is this really what's best for me? How do I actually find that? And so I think for a lot of us, you know, it's something really common that it has to come to this like breaking point for us to really realize like, wait a second, I have to do something different. And so did you find that when you were dealing with all of this stress and you found yourself with this anxiety attack, did you find that anyone else had been going through similar things that you were around, or like, did you feel comfortable sharing that with others at the time?
No. And like everything you just said brought up like 20 other things for me, because it really is part of how we're taught. And I am still very actively struggling with this as we get busy again post-COVID. It's really like, it's hard for me to think about the fact that I need to make some choices and not say yes to every single thing. We're very much taught as musicians, say yes, do everything you can, because you never know when one thing will lead you to this other great thing that you're supposed to do, you know. And then think about the times in school when you have all this classwork to do, but you also have to practice 4 hours a day. And how many times did you stay until midnight to practice and then get up at 6 the next day to go to class? You know, it just, we're taught this sort of cycle of like, it's fine, just keep going, just keep saying yes, just keep doing everything. And it's really like, even now, well established in my life, it's really hard for me to say, you know, I don't want to teach 40 students a week. I'd like to teach 25. Like, then feeling like I'm not a failure because I'm not filling my studio up to like this massive number, you know, that is, maybe I don't even want it. But anyway, to your question, when this happened, I didn't tell anybody. I didn't want anyone to know, because I thought, if people think that this is who I am, or this is what's going to happen when they hire me, no one will hire me to play. So I totally just, you know, pushed it down and thought, well, okay, like, you know, I'll just persevere. And at some point, maybe I'll feel better. So it wasn't until I had, you know, that whole year at home to sit on it and think about it and understand what I think really caused it, which was maybe not even related to nerves about my performance abilities, you know, that that I felt comfortable talking about it.
Yeah. And I think too, something you touched on earlier, that like, it's not just about how do we deal with stress or how do we deal with anxiety? It's like, it's this multifaceted thing where every single area of our life is kind of contributing to the situation, and how we feel empowered and how we're able to show up and feel confident on stage performing. And sometimes we think that like the answer is to just like stop being stressed or stop being anxious. And it can be really hard to like move to the other side of that.
Yeah, right. Well, and it's a whole, and I mean, you talk about this, you talk about like health concerns outside of musicianship, you know, and things that affect the way you show up as a musician. And so it's super complex and it's really difficult, especially when we're taught not to talk about that stuff, to figure out for ourselves how to balance real life and then this career life that we're supposed to create.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did meditation and yoga fit into all of this for you? Was this something that you found earlier, or was it a part of moving through this incident of anxiety? How did you find that?
So my first yoga experience was, and I had danced, I mean, like movement was not new to me when I was in college, but I had never done yoga or anything like that. And I took a yoga class that was like an intro to yoga with a friend of mine in college. And if she ever listens to this, she'll laugh that I'm telling the story, but like, it was like a fun class we could take together that fit both our majors. And I don't know, maybe it wasn't even a requirement, but we decided to take this yoga class, and it was like an intro to like how the different styles. So each week was slightly different, and we used to get in trouble in class all the time for like laughing and like talking to each other and whatever. So it obviously did not connect with me at that point. Like I was not like, oh, this is great. Like I just wasn't there. And then I don't even know really when I started to like appreciate yoga, but at some point the gym I was going to was offering yoga, and it was just a class. It was like a Les Mills, like what's the body flow or body, whatever that one is. So it's not like a straight up yoga class, but it was basically a sequenced yoga class. And there was some music and like, it was stretching and breathing and all that stuff. And I loved it. And I just made a point to go like twice a week. And then there was another class at that gym with a certified instructor who was wonderful that I would go to. And I think that was sort of my into yoga. And also when I was doing it so regularly, I don't think I realized the benefit I was gaining from it. I don't think I understood. And so then it wasn't until I hadn't done it for a few years that I started to think, oh, maybe I should like be doing yoga again. That would be great. And then I think I shared with you, and I'll try to tell the short version of the story about meditating, because I got really back into yoga again. And not really into meditation or breath work or any of that stuff. And a friend of mine who was struggling to perform well in auditions, who's an excellent oboist, started having great auditions. And I said to her, well, what did you do? Like, what's your secret, you know? And she was like, well, I started meditating. And I was like, get out of here. it was like, no, you did not. So, but she really like from a performance mindset. So the two things that she found like sort of as like a gateway to it were also that way for me, which was George Mumford's book, The Mindful Athlete. And then also Dan Harris and the 10% Happier, like his book, 10% Happier, his app, his podcast is great. And it just got me started. And, you know, I think having time over COVID, especially for meditation, made a big difference, because what else was I doing? So I did it every day. And it is like anything else we do, and especially as musicians, we know you have to do these things each day. They build up, you know, you build these skills over time. And it was having that time to sit down every day for 10 minutes and then, you know, 3 months in and then 6 months in, and then now going back to normal, I'm noticing what an amazing difference it's making in my life.
That's so amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. And I think something that I realized when I started doing meditation is just how similar practicing and meditating really are. And that there's a way of both practicing and meditating where you don't necessarily have to listen to your thoughts. You can be focused on external things that are going on. And I know for myself, when I first started doing meditation and really listening to my thoughts, I started being able to listen to my thoughts in the practice room for the first time. Yeah. And I was just astounded by like how much internal chatter was happening that I never really stopped and listened to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is such a great point. And like the cross application of meditation coming into practice, and in the ways that they're similar. I mean, you're so right. There's so many connections. And like you said about the chatter and like, just being able to sit down and practice now and think, you know, like, oh, that high note is like so gross. I sound so bad today. You have this, like all this stuff going on. And then it's like, oh, okay, well, that's just a thought. Like, that's fine. I'm going to move on and do this again. And I'm going to pay attention to what I'm actually supposed to pay attention to, which is like, you know, how this feels or that feels or whatever. Yeah, it's just, it's amazing how we are not aware of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's not like, I think you were talking about this before, in our last conversation, just how meditation should be a part of our teaching when we're in school, should be a part of our learning.
Yeah. I mean, I just am fascinated, like you said, about the application for myself in the practice room. And then when you start to think, what would have happened if someone would have taught me this stuff 10 years ago, 15 years ago, all these things I struggled with, you know, in the practice room, beating myself up over not being able to do this or do that, or why can't I do this yet? Or all these thoughts that you can learn to like watch come and go and not attach yourself to. It's such a unique thing that we do, where our worth as a person is attached to our job, because our job is about expression. And So, you know, if you can learn to separate your thoughts and not have these like judgments of yourself, I just think how valuable that would be.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's so many parallels, I think, between the music world and the athletic world. I know there's a lot of other people that kind of talk about this too. And how, you know, athletes work on mindset all the time, right?
Yes. And this is the other thing that's shocking to me. It's become like an obsession with me. I love like reading about the way the brain works now. And I just have started to really dig into like, I'm fascinated by breath work. And I know you do a lot of that. And I'm like just reading about the way that our physical body, like, and the breath, and then especially as a wind player, just thinking about all of these connections and mindset and reading about how so often athletes come up when you read about this stuff, about both things. And the way that they train includes the whole person, includes their mindset, you know, all of that. And it's like, why are we pretending that's not a thing? What, you know, you're watching people perform at their peak. And they do things so far as to like, I was reading about an Olympic swimmer who would like literally write down her entire day and then give it to her coach so that they could just look over how she was handling like her everything, right? How it was all coming together. And I'm not saying we need to like analyze every, you know, whatever with our private teachers, but just the concept of like, you know, we just think somehow we're supposed to have this magic power to be good musicians.
Yeah, or to have the mental fortitude to be able to compartmentalize or to be able to handle stressful situations. And that sometimes handling stressful situations is not a cognitive ability either, right? It's sometimes a nervous system regulation thing or like a... Just, yeah.
There's so many
aspects to it. Yeah.
It's visceral a lot of the time. It's understanding like how to balance your visceral experience and then, you know, your thinking brain at the same time. Yeah, 100%. And you know, when we get really like up, like regulated, it just shuts down that thinking part. We just become so like, you know, you're just winging it because you're just trying to survive and just training ourselves to see that coming so that we can sort of go like, oh yeah, I can calm down. I can chill out.
So I know you're really open with your students about these kinds of conversations. And I know you've told me about how you try to integrate mindfulness and mindset into your lessons with students. And so have there been any ways of doing that have been really successful for you? Are there any like interesting takeaways that you've had so far with particular students or?
I mean, I think this is still like sort of a new, because like we've been talking about, this is stuff I wish somebody would have told me like a long time ago. And so then it's now I'm teaching and I'm seeing my students and, you know, like instrument stereotypes are sometimes right. So flute players have a tendency to be a little like, we're a little high strung, you know? So a lot of my students are very much like I was in high school. Their grades are very important to them. They're very driven. They put a lot of pressure on themselves. They're perfectionists, you know, and they have, all the same stressors that I had in that way. So it's when I'm teaching them, it's like some of it, and I've always kind of done this even before I got into understanding more about wellness, but letting them know that I went through the same things, being willing to share that I had those same experiences. I mean, one, it humanizes you as a teacher, but then also for those students, they get to say, oh, look, like you came out the other side of that. You've lived through this thing, you know, to help them feel like you can relate to what they're going through in that way. And I am like very open with my students about all of the experiences of performing. I think the fact that we all have good and bad performances, but I think just lately, the thing for all of my students that I have tried to do that's been helping me the most is to just be observant, to like, they're moving so fast and you're not super embodied as a teenager, you know? And so just getting them to like, take a step back and think for a second before they play, or like before they, you know, they all have this tendency to be like, well, I'll say play this thing, and they'll say, well, I'll probably fail, but I'll try. Like, whoa, stop, back up. Did you not practice this week? And they're like, well, yeah. And I'm like, well, then think about, you know, what did you practice? You didn't practice standing there and saying, I'm going to fail. You know, so it's like shifting that mindset for them, I think is what I've seen the biggest impact from, and just what I've been focused on lately. And then also just teaching them about, and I guess it's body mapping to some extent, teaching them about like their concept of how they are making sound.
It's so funny. What just came up for me is that like, there's so many younger people right now that are finding humor in like saying negative things about themselves.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed that as a pattern. And I think there is like a way of accepting and healing by like joking about some of the traumatic experiences that we've been through.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think that like, if we tell ourselves like, I'm a horrible person enough times, that becomes really internalized and your brain starts to believe it because you keep saying it. So it must be true. And I think it can be really impactful to just like starting to notice these things that we tell ourselves, whether that be verbally or like inside of our own minds. Do you feel like that's something as well in this upcoming generation, or like, are there any other things that you think people kind of struggle with in terms of mindset?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a huge one, because I see like a lot of my students doing it, and I don't see them doing it until they're in like middle school. And then really until they get a phone and they get Instagram, and then you see them start to pick up the things that all these other, you know, people their age are doing. And I think one of my biggest fears for my students is like, I remember being really insecure in school, but I didn't have to look at other people who looked perfect all the time, or who looked like they had it together all the time, or had a big giant group of friends or whatever, whatever it is when you're 13 that makes you feel like, oh, I'm not keeping up, you know? And I think that some of where that self-deprecation comes from is that they see people who just always look like they've got it together, you know? And then it's like, I just want them to understand that everyone is human, you know, and that just because you feel like something is scary, or you feel like it might not turn out perfectly, or you have an interest that somebody else doesn't have, doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you make such a great point too, that social media is a big part of this for this younger generation, and how people not only are viewing themselves, but comparing themselves to others, and how other people sound.
I mean, as adults, we do it. I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but it's hard not to.
It's hard not to. And I know something that's really helped me has been just setting a really firm boundary with social media. And I mean, I'm on social media a lot here. Like, I think that's pretty obvious. And I mean, on Instagram a lot. But I also do like social media management for my string quartet. And I'm constantly like researching and trying to learn new things and try new things. And so something I've done that's really improved my own sense of mindset and comparing myself to others has just been to stop following anyone that makes me feel bad about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Or even just temporarily muting accounts, which is a really beautiful thing, because you don't have to unfollow someone to mute them on social media.
Right.
And then you're not constantly seeing those images or being bombarded with recordings that just make you feel less than. And I know for me, that's been really helpful to set that boundary with myself. But again, like if we're not conscious that we need to set these boundaries with ourselves, it can be really challenging to understand why we're feeling whatever it is we're feeling.
Yeah, I think too, I would have struggled as a student to, you know, I had, when I went to college, like I was a good player, but I had a lot of work to do. And I knew that going to school, and I chose my program really intentionally to be with somebody who I felt like would guide me through all that stuff that needed done. But if I would have been in school, and you can see, you're seeing other people play so beautifully online on Instagram, it feels like, or people so willing to share their practice, or so I have to think that that can be discouraging, because it can be easy to forget that everyone has to work to get there, you know? And so when you're not seeing all that ugly stuff in the practice room that takes you to being a really good, you know, player, I think it can be pretty damaging. Just to perceive that there's not like that, that somehow you're the only person who has to put in that amount of effort.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, it's like, even if you have to put in more effort than someone else, like that doesn't make you a bad musician. That yeah. just means that you have a different skill set, and maybe your strength is in interpreting the music or in hearing the music in your own unique way. And it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be this thing where like playing all the notes on the page defines success.
Absolutely. And I really think like my experience having to improve all of those things about my playing, it makes me a better teacher. Because when I learned how to do those things well, I was old enough to retain why it was working. I was old enough to retain the process of learning and understand that, like, just because you didn't know doesn't mean you can't know, you know, and then it's easier for me to pull it into like a succinct thing I can share. So I think it's just important. I think that's what I worry about when I see insecurities in my students right now about what to do after school. Like, oh, I haven't picked what I want to do in college yet, or I haven't picked this, or I don't know, whatever. When I see these insecurities, it's like, I just want them to understand that like, it's all of that's like a learning process, you know, this process of discovery, and it will continue, you know, just because you pick something doesn't mean in 5 years, you're not going to be like, oh, that's not quite right.
Oh, that's so true. Someone says learning to say no is so empowering. Yes.
I'm still learning. That's ongoing.
I really struggle with that one too. And I think, I know we kind of talked about this, but just like the messages and the advice that our teachers give us and those that we look up to give us at a younger age, when we're really trying to like emulate our teachers and step into a professional life as a musician, that messaging can be so hard to undo or unlearn.
Yeah.
If we're associating whatever that message is with success. And I know someone told me early on, like, you always have to say yes to opportunities. And it's like, I know they said that with the absolute best intentions, but you know, I still took that in a way where I was like, oh, I have to say yes to everything. My parents aren't musicians. How am I supposed to know any better?
Right. Yeah, man. I mean, I think we can all relate to that. And then I think I said earlier, and like, I was just very fortunate that the teacher I was with in my formative years, like, I think had a very wise perspective on how they were sharing things with us, but you're very impressionable at that age, you know, and it's really, and I think I remember how much I looked up to my flute teacher in high school. I remember how important that time was for me each week. And granted, I knew I wanted to play the flute. I knew that was what I wanted to keep doing, but you know, students really listen. So then it's like, you have to really be mindful about what you share.
Yeah, what you share and like how you model that too, because yes. I know I never saw my I don't know about you, but I never saw my teachers like warming up their physical body before they practiced,
right,
before they demonstrated something to me. in a lesson. And so when someone told me I needed to warm up before practicing, I was like, wait, my teachers never do that. Why would I do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that layer that on top of the fact that when you're younger, you just feel invincible. You just feel sort of like, oh yeah, it's cool. I'm just going to pick my flute up and play for 5 hours and I'm like good to go.
Right. Yeah. You know, my teacher needs to warm up because they're old. Like,
yeah, right. Exactly. Like it can very much like be that perspective. I mean, that's the take I think I would have had on mindfulness as a young student. Like, I think I might have understood it, but I just feel like it can be hard to relate to when you don't, with, you know, the older you get, the more context you have for things. And so when you're younger, you just don't have that context to stick that in and think about why that would be. And again, making a parallel to sports, I think probably younger, really high performing athletes probably already do have a grasp on maybe what that, and I could be wrong. I was not an athlete, but I think you have, like, when we have our studio recitals, like there's a big audience there because, you know, each kid brings however many family members or whatever. So you have a fairly big audience to play for, but I don't think it carries quite the same feeling as getting up in front of a whole stadium of people, you know, and having to catch or throw at exactly the right moment with like a lot of people outside your inner circle relying on you to do a good job. You know, so I feel like it would be easier as a young athlete maybe to understand why your mindset is so imperative for what you want to do versus understanding as a young musician why your mindset matters so much for your own mental well-being and your ability to perform well later on. It's like everything else we do as a musician, it's very like personal. It's just you in the practice room a lot of the time. And so I don't think that sheds light on things as early for us as it could.
Yeah, we don't have like a personal trainer, music trainer, right. Or like a coach with us in the practice room, making sure that we have good habits.
Yeah. Sometimes I think it would be nice. Sometimes not, because then you have to face like, oh, you're right, I should do that really hard thing again.
Yeah. Okay, we have a couple more comments. Someone says, lovely to hear you both, totally on board with everything you said. Awesome. Thank you. What an incredible gift to share with your students. They're so lucky to have you as a teacher. Embracing imperfections for students is key to getting to the next level as players and people.
Yeah, understanding. I think for my students, understanding that like something not being perfect isn't like an absolute failure. There's definitely a disconnect in that mindset. And that goes back to the ways that meditation has helped me to not personalize things that go wrong.
Right. Because we are not our thoughts, right?
Right.
Our thoughts. We don't have to, at least we get to decide which thoughts we accept and which ones we don't want to accept.
Right. The mind as a television screen, you know, they can come and we can look at them and we can let them go.
I'm not sure you have an answer to this question, or even if I have an answer to this question, but who do you both model yourself after at this point in your careers?
This is such an interesting question.
Yeah. I would say I model myself after the person that I wish I had in my life
when I was younger.
Because I didn't have anyone talking about these kinds of issues about musicians' wellness. And so when I was dealing with injury, I know I felt like I couldn't talk to my teacher. I couldn't talk to my colleagues. I tried talking to a medical professional and they told me I should quit. And so it's like, who do I talk to about this stuff? And so I think my journey, at least, like I've tried to learn as much as possible about, you know, things like yoga and meditation and movement in order to be the person I wish I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, that's such a good answer. And like my whole studio model for my private studio is literally based on that, because I grew up somewhere that we just didn't have access to like lots of great music education I had wonderful teachers, but there were a lot of things missing from my education as a young musician. And so the things I do with my studio really are driven by the things I know I needed when I was a young musician. But I think beyond that, it's really interesting for like an early part of your life to think maybe that you really want to be like a particular teacher you've had, and then to grow up and realize that you're that is never going to happen, and it shouldn't, because you are not just that person, you're that person's influence and then whatever other influences. And so I think it's a combination of trying to provide the things, like you said, be the person that you needed, and then also to do justice to like all the best things that I've received, you know, and whether that's yoga or mindfulness or, you know, some of my flute teachers who really made a huge positive impact, and then to try to pull those things into your teaching regularly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. That's beautiful. And I think too, there's a sense of in the music world where if you're doing anything outside of being in the practice room, then you're not worthy as a musician, or there's a reason why you're gravitating towards things other than music, because you may not be so serious about music.
Yeah.
And I remember when I first started teaching as a 200 hour, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to teach at my gym on campus. And like, I'm not really going to go all in because I don't know that I want anyone to know that I'm doing this or that I really want to be serious about it. And someone who's a local yoga teacher that I looked up to was like, why are you keeping yourself small? Mm-hmm. Like, why are you limiting yourself? Like, for what? For who?
Yeah.
And I keep coming back to this thing where I'm like, oh, I don't want to go all in, or like, I don't really want to do all of this stuff because I don't know how people are going to perceive me, or if I'm really going to be good at it. And I think people keep coming into my life lately and just reminding me like, that, like, why keep yourself small? And so I think there's a bit of that too. It's like, I tried not to limit myself. It's not necessarily that I'm modeling myself after someone, but it's like, hey, what do I want to do? Like, let's try to do that and just see what happens.
That's so important. And I think you make such a good point about that feeling that what we do has to be exactly what we were trained to do, or somehow we are not valuable as a musician. And like, it just like brought up so much stuff. Like, just thinking about when I moved here, I literally had no connection. So I left a full-size studio and an adjunct teaching job and moved because I wanted to be like somewhere more populated and on the East Coast and whatever. And I got a job at Starbucks, and I was like, it was lock and key. I would not tell anyone. I was like humiliated that I had this other job, which is ridiculous. I needed to make money so I could pay my rent, you know, but it just felt like I can't tell people that I'm doing this, you know. And fortunately, I think some of that is going away for younger musicians because it's just a necessity to survive. And because we share so much now, it's hard not to like have to talk about some of that. But yeah, I mean, I think this feeling, it's like when I got, you know, certified this year, and it like, you feel like people are going to look at you and think, well, like, oh, is she going to stop like gigging, or like, what's going on? Like, what's that about? Like, you're teaching at a yoga studio now? That's weird. And I'm like very much at the beginning of figuring out how these two things come together for me. And I know that it has something to do with my take on teaching and pedagogy and like the things that I think it's important for people to learn early on. But it is scary to decide like, okay, I'm just going to like put this out here and see what happens with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And like trailblaze or do something different. But I think that you, I mean, I mentioned this to you, your account, Embodied Singer, Shauna at Embodied Singer, like seeing people sharing this stuff and like little teeny bits and pieces of it that I can just like, yes, that thing is what I needed to pinpoint, like that I hadn't put two and two together on yet. And then you start to realize that it's important for people to do these new things. It's important for people to figure out how all this stuff fits together.
Yeah. And what makes you happy and like feel fulfilled. And that's the other thing too, is, I mean, we can decide and re-decide at any moment. Like we don't have to decide like forever right now what this balance looks like for us. And I mean, I know colleagues that have found other careers aside from music and then, you know, decided later to come back to music. And I think that as long as you're always in the search of like, what is going to make me feel better? What is going to make me feel fulfilled? Then I think, you know, there's never a wrong way to do it.
Right. And I think it's so important. Like you think about looking for what makes you happy, what you identify with, it's just going to put you in the right place to make a difference, you know? And I think that's the other thing that the internet kind of tells us is that like, you have to have 15,000 people following you and like, you know, be impactful to them to be important. And that's not true. And if you've taught in a public school or you've taught privately, you understand that that's not true, that you, it's just as important for you to be in the right place sharing with one student or just 20 students or whatever it is, you know, just even if there's that one person who benefits from what you can teach them, you know, because you were willing to figure out what you should be sharing.
That's so beautiful. I love that. Oh, yeah. So something else I wanted to talk about real quick is your warm-up routine has to put you in a focused mindset that it's not just about what you're doing with your physical body, but that you can use warm-up as like an opportunity for mental focus as well.
Yeah, this is and I mentioned this to you, something I just read about like very recently. It was James Clear's book, Atomic Habits, which like he is a gem on Instagram to follow. The little bits and pieces, they're so like, they kind of light a fire under you to think about how you're behaving in your daily life. And it's really interesting. But I read his book and one of the sections was talking about how building habits, good habits, intentional habits can put you in a flow state to do whatever it is, the task, you know, that you need to do. And it just, I'm thinking about warmups and I'm thinking about how great to have that perception of creating this routine for yourself. And athletes do it. We know they do it. They eat the same thing. They drink the same thing. They do the same stretches. You know, and the idea being that like, even if you don't feel like being focused when you start, by the time you finish this warm-up, you've done it in this way with this intention so many times that it puts you in that state of mind. And I just think what a cool concept and what an opportunity for us as musicians to have the physical warm-up that puts us in the right place, but also a mental warm-up that puts us in a place where we're confident and we're able to do what we need to do. And like, definitely, we all have a warm-up routine, I think, to some extent. Like I have certain things I really like to do before an orchestra concert, but just to take it to the next level. And this is just like that awareness of what you're doing in your practice or what you're doing in your warm-up, and you know, to think ahead a little bit, how can this impact, you know, other things. I'm just like, it's just an exciting concept to me.
That's amazing. So if you're someone, maybe to our listeners, if you're someone new to mindfulness or maybe this idea of having a specific warm-up to get you in the right frame of mind, do you have any suggestions for people who are just starting out with this idea?
I think I always I'll back myself up a bit, because I have this concept with teaching that I love to use, which is to have a toolbox of things that are available to you, whatever they are, physical, mental, playing. You have a box of things you can choose out of. You can pick and choose the things that you want to use. And I do, when I do fundamental exercises with my students, it's always under the pretense that they can develop a warm-up for themselves based on what they need. And so then as you get to know yourself, we all have sort of favorites. So I think for me, starting with an exercise that I love, that like just makes me feel good to play, I always start that way. I have one or two that just feel good. And then now I think incorporating something that gets you focused has also really, I feel that that's very important. So it's not just beginning by playing something you love, but also doing something that you know is going to make you bring you a little bit inward, it'll make you a little introspective, to notice like how you're feeling, how what your mind feels like, how your attention feels, not feeling like you have to change yourself, you know, and making those two things part of your warm-up, I think, is a great place to start, so that you don't have that sense of like getting into a warm-up and then being like, I have to do whatever. I have to come out of this like a machine ready to go. Now, like just giving yourself some space and just taking inventory as a place of getting started, I think that is a great starting point.
I love that. And I feel like that can be so motivating too, just as a way to like, if you're not feeling motivated, just taking out your instrument and going through that that warm up that you create for yourself as a way to kind of center yourself, mm-hmm. and get into the mood for practicing, that it doesn't have to be something big or profound or that you have to accomplish a lot.
Yeah, right. And even by doing that act, if it's 10 minutes, if it's 5 minutes, you're doing something for yourself, you know. And how often I think we get very like, you know, we're not good at slowing down anyway, most of us right now. And so not feeling immediately that you have to go to the next thing, that you can take that 5 seconds for whatever it is that makes you feel like you can center yourself. Even if that's all you do and you don't really practice, I still think you're doing yourself a service.
Beautiful. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
No, I feel like I just like went on like tangents, but it just, and like we said, I think you brought it up at the beginning about things really being so intertwined. And I think we get started on, you know, this thing or that thing, and then realize that like, that applies to practice, that applies to performance, that applies to teaching. Like, it's all so like pulled together. But I think, no, otherwise I would just share that, like, and you said this as well, you can always change your mind. You can always, like, it's never too late to decide you want to do something new, or that you want to take a chance on something, or just that you want to pay more attention to your own wellness, and like in whatever way that speaks to you. So I love meditation and I love yoga, but that doesn't mean that's right for somebody else. And just knowing that you can always carve out some time for those things.
I love that. That's so amazing. Thank you so much for being here, Morgan, and for chatting with me today. I feel like I learned so much from you, and it was so great to talk.
Like I said, I'm like longtime fan, so this is just super fun. And I feel like there's a bajillion things I could pick your brain about. So I just love talking about things like this and hearing your perspective on them.
Oh, thank you so much. And to everyone who's listening, if you want to follow up with Morgan or send her a DM, be sure to follow her. Her Instagram handle is @DFSFlute.
Yeah.
So you can connect with her there. And you also have a website.
I do. It's linked in my Instagram account, but it's my first name, Morgan, with two N's. And Elyce, E-L-Y-C-E Davis. My name is like all oddly spelled, but so it's in there. If you find me on Instagram or you like punch it into Google or, you know, any of those places, but yeah, I love talking about this stuff. So please feel free to reach out.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to hit subscribe, give us a rating, and follow on Instagram @TheAlignedMusician. Thank you so much, and take care.